In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, September 13th, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories from this week that they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order and come in and count them down on the Federal News Countdown this week. It is John Palguda of the Partnership Public Service. Great to see you, my friend.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in, and thank you for putting up with Massachusetts Avenue, which I understand was just a nightmare for you trying to get up here.
Yeah, if you're out there driving, leave extra time if you got to take Mass Ave.
It's a little rough, especially on a Friday. It seems a little unusual, but I'm glad you're here and ready to go on the countdown. And my colleague Jason Miller joining us on the countdown this week. Hello, sir.
I like to be called Benny Ayala instead. Benny Ayala, the pinch hitter.
Yeah. And
that's for you old Oriole fans out there.
And very old Oriole fans like me. 1979, he was a terrific guy off the bench. But you're different because he was not capable of really doing anything else except coming off the bench. And that's not the case here, as we'll see, because your story show up all throughout the countdown, not just ones that you've chosen, but that John's chosen too. So let's get going on the Federal News Countdown with
number three.
And Jason, we'll start with you on the countdown this week. Your third most important story is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is GOP stopgap spending plan to be delayed. And I will start by saying I have a pet peeve that nobody knows about, obviously, before they wrote this. I hate the term stopgap spending plan because nobody really talks that way.
Right, and it's hard to say, too.
It is hard to say. But this is not surprising, I guess, because we're here at the last minute again.
Again, yes. And I was always mixed on this story. Is it number one or is it number three, to be honest? And I went with number three for, I think, several reasons. But the biggest reason was the fact is, of course, it's delayed. Of course, there's a problem. Of course, they'll get it done at 11:59 on September 30th, right before the new fiscal year starts. And of course, there's always going to be the back and forth and the negotiations and the season on the brink of spending plans.
Yeah.
But at the same time, hey, there's only, I think it was something like 5 or 7 legislative days left.
Well, we were going to have, it was going to be 4 next week. And then now they've said they're going to come back the week of the 23rd when they were going to be out. So we're back to 8 or 9 now, depending how you count.
Right. So 8 or 9 legislative days, not a lot of time because there's a lot to iron out. So the clock is ticking. I imagine agencies are getting a little nervous. And then right behind that is the debt limit discussion, so that just adds another piece to this ever continuing puzzle. And the fact is that agencies there's also questions around sequestration, how that's going to affect this CR. Mm-hmm. Will sequestration matter under CR? Will they have to wait until the Congress does pass a full budget and then take money off the top? A lot of questions out there, a lot of concerns.
And not a lot of answers at this point, and that's what it seems to be. That's what I my sense is really difficult on the Hill, even. Not just in the agencies, but the Hill hasn't figured out answers to a lot of those questions that you're talking about. And those are the kinds of things they're not even making progress on because they're thinking about the big stuff. Can we even come up with something?
Right. And in the beginning of the week, we had a story about Speaker of the House Boehner saying we have a bill ready to go.
Yeah.
We'll fund through December 15th. And then not 2 days later, it's this story that says, oh, it's delayed because of the funding for the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
And I think that just, the Republicans are trying to defund it, and the Democrats obviously want to keep funding going, mm-hmm. and that becomes a big, pretty red line for too much use of the red line in this world. And both the administration obviously won't sign it either.
Right.
And then nobody wants to do the government shutdown dance, but I think it's again on the brink again. And John, you were talking previously before we went on the air regarding the havoc on agencies. I mean, what are you hearing from agencies?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Jason. The problem isn't that, people think that we're going to run out of money entirely and all that. And it's not so much panic as agitation.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hard to plan for running an organization when you don't know how much you're going to have, when you're going to have it, what the conditions are going to be. And, for a federal manager, you got to plan ahead, strategic planning, and it's all about the mission and all that. And they get it. but you know they're not getting the tools to do it well. They're not getting the information to do it well, and it's as much frustration as anything else.
I had Congressman Van Hollen on the show earlier in the week, and he said I asked him if anybody had ever done a tally of how much it costs to do all of the exercises that are involved with all of these things that never wind up happening, the shutdown and all of those kinds of things, the furlough plans that then agencies said, oh, we don't have to do it after all, and all of that kind of stuff. And he didn't come right out and say he would like somebody to look at that and figure it out, but he indicated an interest for that kind of knowledge. So it wouldn't surprise me if we started to see those numbers come around as kind of a weapon to beat the other side over the head with, look, you're causing all of these kinds of things, and it's on top of not saving anything, it's costing us this much. Jason Miller's third most important federal news story of the week on the countdown is headline, GOP stopgap spending plan to be delayed, and it's up now on federalnewsradio.com. John Palguda, your third most important story of the week is actually a remembrance in a way. It's Mike Causey's column from Thursday about the day after 9/11/2001.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the 12th year anniversary, and for those of us and your listeners who were in D.C. or New York in particular, it's a day you can't forget. And, you know, Mike's take on this was, you know, those people who were there and what they remember. And I remember I was at a interagency. I was still a federal employee at the time. I was at an interagency meeting a couple blocks from the White House. When we got the word that, you know, there's been these attacks. And so we all exited the building. And I remember coming out to complete gridlock in the district, walking back to my office. I was working for the Merit Systems Protection Board at the time, about 8 or 9 blocks away. And it was just a surreal, environment. When I got back to the office, I had a little television, in my office, and my staff was there, you know, with the watching it, and, we commiserated. And then, yeah, I stayed. There was no point trying to leave the city, and I left the television on with the sound off. But of course, all the newscasts were simply replaying the World Trade Towers, collapsing, mm-hmm. you know, over and over again. And Mike Causey's successor at the Washington Post, Steve Barr, called me doing stories. He said, "You know, our editor wants to find out, what are people thinking?" And I shared my thoughts of frustration and anger. And it was, it's 12 years, mm-hmm. and it's still very vivid.
It's amazing to hear the people talking about this that I saw on TV this week, and reading Mike's column and all of this, how fresh it still feels. I mean, Mike said for folks of for that are a little younger than him, this is our Pearl Harbor. And I said, well, for somebody like me, born in 1965, this is probably what it felt like for people who were around for the Kennedy assassination too.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, I was lucky enough in some ways to be able to cover the aftermath mm-hmm. of 9/11, meaning not just the Department of Homeland Security creation and things like that, but literally shortly after 9/11, when I was at a different publication, we were doing stories about interagency collaboration and what did Arlington County and Virginia do to keep the communication wires up and, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. And I think, you know, we were so busy kind of covering it, I never really gotten a chance to step back and say, oh, well, what was the impact of it? And, you know, but each year, as you cover it, as you cover Homeland Security, as you meet the people who are doing the job, meeting the intelligence analysts in the government, meeting the people through, whether it's the FBI or people at the Agriculture Department, APHIS, keeping plants and animals safe, you get a better appreciation of just how much has gone into it and how much has changed mm-hmm. over the last 12, 13 years.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. The impact it's had where, you know, Washington's a company town. And when you look at what's happened in the government as a result, we didn't have Homeland Security in 2001. We didn't have federal transportation security officers at the airports. That was a privatized function. Mm-hmm. So much has happened as a result that, you know, it's not just remembering the events of the day, but it's thinking about all of the changes that it's caused in the country and in the way the government operates.
And in fact, real quick, Francis, I know even we can look at the National Security Agency's recent uproar over its spying program, for lack of a better word. That's another piece to it as well that all kind of brings it together.
Federal News Radio's Mike Causey is the author of John Palguda's third most important federal news story of the week. The headline is 9/12/01, the morning after a real nightmare. And you can read it in all of our stories on this week's countdown, linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The second most important federal news story of the week from John Palguda and Jason Miller when the countdown continues on Federal News Radio.
Adaptable and survivable are all words that describe the LPD-17 San Antonio class of amphibious warships. The brave sailors and Marines who protect our nation deserve nothing less than a ship that can take them into harm's way and, most importantly, bring them safely home again. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, we're proud to be building these ships that have proven their capability to achieve multiple missions. LPD-17, an able class.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Would you trust someone with disabilities to test high-tech protective combat gear? Our armed forces do. Source America provides the military with a highly trained, exceptional workforce, people with significant disabilities. In fact, Source America provides vital expertise to thousands of federal customers across the country. For everything from contract closeouts to food service to call center support. Learn more at sourceamerica.org. An Ability One authorized enterprise.
Whether you practice, create, or enforce the law, Thomson Reuters delivers best-in-class legal solutions that help you work smarter. Solutions like Westlaw Next for legal research and current awareness, Clear for law enforcement and fraud investigation, and Thomson Reuters Concourse to help you organize, collaborate, and expand your capabilities. More legal solutions, one solution provider. See a better way forward at LegalSolutions.com/DC.
The Mobility Report is brought to you by CDWG.
The Postal Service is deploying more than 175,000 mobile devices to its letter carriers by the end of September. The Postal Service wants letter carriers to instantly upload their delivery information so its customers can track their packages in real time. The phones are Bluetooth ready, and the Postal Service says it's developing even more capabilities for letter carriers out in the field. The agency says it's the first step of a larger plan to expand its access to its customers. I'm Sean McCauley.
Voicemail, email, conferencing, IM. It's a mess. And if you're in federal IT, you're the cleanup crew. Visit cdwg.com/unified to see how a UC solution can help sort it out. Neat and tidy is our specialty. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how UC solutions from Microsoft can help you improve productivity by streamlining communications.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. We'll be broadcasting live from the Air Force Association's Air and Space Conference and Tech Expo, and we'll get an update from Brigadier General John Michel, the commanding general of NATO's Air Training Command Afghanistan, plus why agencies deploy outside groups to sign up people for federal benefits. Those stories and much more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
The fabled Dream Team. You find them in sports, in music, and now healthcare has one too. Kaiser Permanente. How do we do it? It starts with recruiting. Hire the great from top medical schools across the country. Next, practice, practice, practice. Let doctors practice their passion. patient care. Less time on paperwork means more time with patients. And finally, teamwork. Our technology connects 8.7 million members with their doctors and thousands of caregivers with each other, allowing doctors across the hall or across the country to easily share knowledge. With this information exchange, we've helped reduce serious heart attacks by 62%. So here's a rousing, fist-pumping cheer for our medical dream team. Join us at kp.org to choose your doctor or change anytime. We believe our members deserve nothing less. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Study conducted in Northern California, 2001 through 2010. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM at federalnewsradio.com. Today on the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by John Palguda and Jason Miller. And we are up to
number 2.
John Palguda, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Federal Hiring Declines to Six-Year Low Point. And I guess this is not anything that people are really surprised by. I mean, I would think that hiring would certainly be down given where we've been budget-wise and all the other things that we're going through right now.
Well, I think it depends where you are, Francis. I think there are actually a lot of folks outside the Washington, D.C. bubble actually are going to be surprised at this.
Oh.
We were talking before the break about, you know, the impact of 9/11, 2001. We talked about all the budget difficulties, you know, all the new pressures on government. And I think there are a lot of folks in the country who think, well, you know, government workforce must be booming. You know, we got all these, you know, new national security concerns and VAs building up and all that. So, you know, as part of the expanding workforce. And in fact, the story that is in the Post, which is actually based on an analysis of my organization, Partnership for Public Service, we see that in 2012, there were actually more people who left government than were hired. We had about a net decline of over 25,000 employees, and we're at a level now where we were in the mid-60s.
Mm.
So, you know, the fact that government workforce is not only not growing, it's actually shrinking. We understand it in terms of the budget pressures of government. But I think a lot of folks don't realize that, you know, they're getting the same, you know, or even more bang for their buck from government with fewer people trying to meet more challenges, serve more people who are, you know, as the population mm-hmm. grows. And so it's also the other interesting thing in the article is not just that, you know, the hiring or the workforce is declining slightly. But it's about when they do hire to replace some of the people who leave, it's where those folks are being hired mm-hmm. into, if you will. You know, over one out of five are in medical and public health, a lot in VA, of course. But then you've got, you know, some in DOD, some in National Institutes of Health, Centers for Disease Control, and so on. We, you know, hiring a lot of information IT people, a lot of accounting folks, you know, investigations, and most of them in a relatively small number of agencies. It's not, you know, evenly spread. So obviously, Veterans Affairs, one out of every four new hires in that one agency to take care of the wounded
wow.
warriors. And then, as you might expect, a lot of hiring. Well, relatively a lot of hiring compared to others in Department of Defense and Homeland Security and Department of Justice. And then much less when you get down to the domestic agencies like agriculture, commerce, health, and human services.
Mm-hmm. Jason, the story that our colleague Jack Moore wrote about this on federalnewsradio.com, he writes, out of 39 medium and large agencies defined as those with 1,000 or more employees, 26 hired fewer employees in fiscal 2012 than they did the previous year. I mean, no matter how you slice this, you know, John talks about the proportional numbers and per capita and so forth, but even just raw numbers down considerably, and no matter how you slice it, the government is downsizing.
Well, what you're seeing here is the after effects of hiring freezes, of buyouts, early outs,
mm-hmm.
and another bubble of people are coming from a younger generation. They're replacing, agencies are replacing older generation with the younger generation. I mean, one of the most interesting statistics that I read through was a third of the new hires were ages 25 to 34, mm-hmm. while only 2.2% of the newcomers were 60 to 64. So what you're seeing is, you know, the people with 20, 30, 40 years of experience leaving and new people coming in. And the question is, will you have another bubble in 20 or 30 years of people leaving again? And is there going to be this kind of wave effect?
Especially when, John, we're in a situation where, as the numbers, the analysis that you did of the numbers indicates that really they're only hiring to replace people who are leaving to fill positions that are open. There aren't a tremendous amount of new jobs being created for these people to
absolutely
take.
Correct. And just a little bit over, well, a little bit less than 90,000 hires, which mm-hmm. sounds like, well, 90, yeah, that's a big number.
Not out of 2.1 million.
Exactly. That's the point. And it's the smallest number of new hires in the last 5 or 6 years. So I have to say one other thing about the analysis here is that when you look at the demographics, too, it's not what some people were expecting. Almost 45% of new hires were veterans, the highest proportion of veterans that we've seen, and almost 60% were males, kind of goes together with veterans hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just an interesting demographic, too, in terms of who's being hired.
16% of them have advanced degrees, so the federal government's not hiring dummies. They're hiring very highly educated, well, very technically skilled people.
And that's absolutely. And that's the argument always around why the pay is so high.
Yeah. The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by John Palgutis from the Washington Post. Federal hiring declines to 6-year low point. You can read it and all of our stories linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the second most important story of the week from Jason Miller on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio.
Now your DHS News Brief brought to you by CenturyLink. More than $2 million worth of counterfeit goods are recovered from an Alabama flea market by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE's Homeland Security Investigations Unit took more than 600,000 items from 47 different vendors. The items include counterfeit designer clothing, shoes, and electronics. For Federal News Radio, I'm Sean McCauley.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Appropriations bills to fund the Transportation and Housing and Urban Development Departments have passed both the House and Senate committees, both chambers agreeing on $140 million to keep open air traffic control towers. But the overall funding levels are very different. The $44 billion House version is $10 billion less than the Senate version. If the conference committee is unable to iron out a compromise, FAA could be looking at closing control towers, which would mean major delays again at airports in the fall.
Hi, I'm Paul Rinaldi, the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I've been an air traffic controller for 20 years, and I can tell you it's an intensely rewarding job. The air traffic controllers are proud public servants, safely guiding your flight and 70,000 other flights each day around this great nation. When you fly, we will guide you home with the highest level of safety and professionalism you expect. Visit us at NATCA.org. That's NACA.org.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Meditate Away. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Stressors like work and finances can cause anxiety. Anxiety happens when your reaction is out of proportion with what might normally be expected. Researchers found that meditation may help. They taught participants a simple form of meditation, mindfulness. Fadel Zidane is a research fellow at Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center School of Medicine.
We found that meditation significantly reduced anxiety levels in every session that participants meditated. Some participants dropped as much as 39%.
Meditation sessions were short, showing their potential to have immediate effects. Zidane suggests trying this technique if you experience daily anxiety. The study in the journal Social Cognitive and Affective Neuroscience was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
How can continuous monitoring and real-time reporting be used to increase our situational awareness? What are possible solutions to challenges faced in adoption of these practices? Discuss these topics and more on October 2nd at the Symantec Government Symposium in Washington, D.C. Learn how to manage the threat lifecycle using actionable intelligence and more at the premier event for government cyber and IT professionals. Register today at symantec.com/symposium. That's symantec.com/symposium.
Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour. Director of National Intelligence James Clapper says Edward Snowden did everyone a favor. Agencies are now focusing much more on insider threat to cybersecurity. While working for NSA contractor Booz Allen Hamilton, Snowden downloaded secret documents and leaked them to newspapers, sparking a national uproar. Federal Times reports Clapper spoke to the Intelligence and National Security Alliance Summit Thursday. He cited the intelligence community's project to standardize IT and improve information sharing and security. Had some of the new capabilities been in place, Clapper says officials might have noticed Snowden's activities before it was too late. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service and Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. And Jason, your second most important story of the week is headlined, "An Analysis Says Cobert Must Avoid Second-Term Pitfalls," written by some schlub that nobody ever heard of on federalnewsradio.com.
Benny Ayala.
It is your story on federalnewsradio.com. And I find this insightful because we know so little about this woman who's going to be a very heavy player in the federal government shortly.
In fact, I would put three stories from this week all on top of this one, around this one. The initial story when the president nominated Ms. Cobert to be the deputy director for management at OMB, the analysis piece that we're talking about here, and then our colleague Jack Moore did a very nice piece late yesterday afternoon regarding an event that featured both Steve Van Roeckel, the federal CIO and acting deputy director for management, and Todd Park, the federal CTO, where they actually did some outlines of what the management agenda will include. So I think the fact is, this administration this week was a kind of a show and tell in many ways of where they're going to. You saw a little bit of it, at least, not enough for my opinion, of course. But I always want more.
Never enough for you, is it?
Never enough. Selfishly, it's never enough. But you're seeing the path that they're starting to plow through the field of management opportunities and what it will include and what the focus is going to be. And I think that's why these sets of stories and this one that I wrote around analysis looking at her challenges and going forward are so important. The other piece is the fact is that nobody knows who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, and I'd love to, John, we're going to turn to you in a second because you can be objective about this more than I can. But I talked to several different people in the performance management community, and the same question multiple people asked me, does she know how to spell government? And that's not trying to be rude. It's not trying to say she's a dumb person because she's at McKinsey for 30 years doing some really great things, I'm sure. But the point is that when you come to government to manage government, you do need to know how government works because there's been enough people who we've seen over the years who get so frustrated they leave very quickly.
John, this is exactly Jason made the point that I wanted to emphasize, is that I haven't heard anybody cast any aspersions on her ability, and you certainly don't work for a company like McKinsey on very high level projects as she has without being very talented and skilled, and yet nobody that is involved in this community knows who she is or what her background or is or what it is that may have led the White House, the president, to choose her for this job.
Well, I count myself among the folks who do not know her, but having read Jason's article, now I know a little bit about her. And I will say, since I don't know except what I've now read in Jason's work, about what she's been doing, but I do know McKinsey. I mean, you know, it's a quite reputable company, obviously. She's been there 30 years. We've actually, the Partnership for Public Service, we've done some work with McKinsey. We did a report a month or two ago on the talent pipeline for the senior executive service. So McKinsey people, you know, not everybody, but hopefully Beth is one of them. McKinsey people do know about government. And I will say, in terms of the role she's going into, it's kind of a lot of folks don't realize how important that deputy director for management can be. You know, the Office of Management and Budget, the, you know, for insiders has always been, well, the B side swallows up the M side. Mm-hmm. But if you have the right person on the M side, it can have a huge impact on how well government operates.
And this administration has fallen short on the M side in many regards. Listen, Jeff Zients, I think, was a smart person, is a smart person, but he got pulled into being acting OMB director so many times, how could he ever really focus on being DDM,
right,
which then had a snowball effect. Danny Werfel got moved out of the controller job to be DDM. He still had controller responsibilities. Now Steve Van Roekel's acting DDM. Again, still CIO responsibilities. You got to get the management side in place and have a management team there for a longer period of time than what we've seen because of the turnover. Now, you know, the Bush administration, for you know, liked them or hated them, thought they did a good job on management or they were too top-down. Clay Johnson was there for a long time, and that had an impact on Karen Evans being there for a long time. Now, don't get me wrong, the Bush administration was not perfect, and by far means, when it came to management, they had major problems with the procurement side of getting someone to stay in OFPP, but at least they had Robert Shea, a performance person, they had Karen Evans in the CIO role, and they had Clay Johnson management role there to give some stability across the board.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any reason to think that perhaps now, with a director in place and a DDM candidate that has no visible signs of opposition, and we have now a deputy director for budget in the confirmation process already, is it possible that we could see that now for the foreseeable future?
I certainly hope so.
The players are starting to line up.
They're still missing a controller. Danny Werfel, remember, left to go to the IRS. He's the acting commissioner. The theory
he could come back, though.
Yeah, but the theory in the community is not. That's the theory, mm-hmm, against the hypothesis that he's probably will be done with the government after Mr. Koskin gets confirmed by the Senate.
Okay.
Now, that's not guaranteed. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
There's also rumors that Steve Van Roekel may be looking to leave. Now, again, rumors, but you know, so there's this turnover that is potential. I think Joe Jordan's pretty well set.
Yeah.
There's a new OPM director coming in, and she'll get through confirmation, I think, fairly soon. So you do need these high-level people in place, though.
Jason Miller's second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is, Cobert must avoid second-term pitfalls. Analysis of the selection of Beth Cobert to become the Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose. When we come back, the most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Jason Miller and John Palguda. This is the Federal News Countdown.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to AAFMAA.com to see how we can help you.
Don't miss game day the Navy way this fall in Annapolis. The season kicks off with a midshipman hosting Delaware on Saturday, September 14th at 3:30 p.m. presented by BB&T. Reserve your seat for the home opener by ordering your tickets today. Season tickets are still on sale, but time is limited. To secure the best seats for all games, call 800-US-4-NAVY or visit NavySports.com. That's 800-US-4-NAVY or NavySports.com to get your single or season tickets today. Navy football, game day, the Navy way.
Read something interesting on federalnewsradio.com and want to share it with your colleagues and friends? Our enhanced articles make it easier than ever to recommend a story to your Facebook friends, tweet it out to your followers, email it to your colleagues, and now share the story directly with your connections on LinkedIn and Google+. One click is all it takes to share the latest news affecting federal employees and government contractors. federalnewsradio.com.
DOD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, DOD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DOD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Wednesday afternoons at 3, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DOD updates at 40 past the hour. DOD Wednesday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Now your Federal News Radio DOD report brought to you by BAE Systems afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. The first of 9 Intrepid Spirit Centers is open at Fort Belvoir. The centers are dedicated to treating traumatic brain injuries and post-traumatic stress disorder. The centers are funded by $100 million worth of donations from public and private sources. You get your DOD report brought to you by BAE Systems afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We are at the top of the Federal News Countdown this week.
Number one.
The most important Federal News story of the week is selected by Jason Miller is Jared Serbu's story on federalnewsradio.com. Takai mandates entire DOD to migrate to enterprise email. Now, I think this story is significant for two reasons. One of them is the migration itself, and the other is the way that this is happening, Jason.
Exactly. Now, I've had plenty of conversations on my Ask the CIO show with Lieutenant General Susan Lawrence, who is the Army's CIO and has moved to enterprise email. I've talked to General Nally over at the Marines and General Basla over at Air Force and Terry Halverson's Navy and asked them that question, hey, you see the Army moving, are you going to follow suit? And all three of the other services, well, you know, we're looking at it. We're considering it. This is important.
No, you're not anymore.
Yeah. And I think the fact is that Terry Takai is mandating it and giving them, I need in 120 days, I need migration plans, and that's that. I think that shows that the shared services, the joint information environment, the JIE that DOD is putting together, is really starting to take hold. Again, I was at this shared services event all day yesterday, and so I'm kind of immersed in shared services right now, but I see this as a big sign of the commitment, not just by this administration, but by people understanding that there's no more money to support multiple email systems when the cloud and the maturation of the cloud as well, this what tells me that we can just go to one place.
Yep. And I think, John, that's the most important thing to look at here. The technology part of it's fine, but the idea that the administration has decided something is important, doesn't matter what it is, and a key player in the administration says, you know what, we're not going to study it, you're not going to have an option. This is what we're going to do, and we're moving forward. And we don't see that as often in government as maybe we should, but we certainly don't see it as often in government as we see it in the private sector. And this is a good example for us to watch, I think, as to how this approach works as a management style, more so than anything to do with technology.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and we're going to be seeing more of it. Because the next story we talk about is going to be budget related. It's the budget environment is you know, people look at all the dysfunction and all that, but nothing is typically all bad. The good part of some of the budget pressures right now is that it's forcing some good behaviors. So this is an example of a good behavior. We're seeing more sharing across agencies than I've seen in decades because they have to. They cannot afford to do business as usual, have your own legacy systems and so on. So I think it's going to be very important to watch how this unfolds, because if this succeeds, it simply opens up the door for more similar efforts of we got to be an enterprise-wide government.
And John is right. We see more of it than we ever have, but there's still plenty. I mean, we're still just scratching the surface.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, I was just follow up on both your comments. with DoD moving toward enterprise email, now other CIOs can say, listen, Terry Takei is telling them to do it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we're much smaller than DoD is,
yep.
So
if they
can
do it, we can certainly do it.
And now she, the one thing she does have on her side that a lot of other CIOs don't is DoD is a very command and control organization. When the top says do it, you do it. I mean, you saw that with the smart identity cards under HSPD-12 for DoD, the CAT cards, when General Kroon back in 2006 timeframe at DISA said, we're moving to logical access using our CAT cards, they all did it. There was no, versus OMB who said to do it, and agencies are still suffering and not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece I wanted to throw out there was relating back to, I think, something you said that was important. The idea that it's being mandated, that she's pushing it down and saying to do it, is an example of what needs to get done across government. Mm-hmm. OMB is not bringing the hammer down like they should. I had a conversation with someone yesterday, and there's something called the Clinger-Cohen letters.
Yep.
That's something that Mark Forman used back in 2002 to say, stop spending money here and spend it money here on a joint solution or joint program. I under the budget issues, I would be surprised. It would be helpful for OMB to start considering these things called Clinger-Cohen letters to force these sharing of resources a little better.
I was heartened by this because it seems like every time we hear about a new I won't use the word mandate because they're not mandates, but they come out of
initiative
or policy or recommendation or whatever. It doesn't have the teeth mm-hmm. that this has. And this is very clear. Ms. Takei is saying, this is how we're going to do it. And what I read between the lines is, you don't have to like it. You don't have to think it's the best way to do it. You don't have to agree with me. You just have to execute.
Right.
And here are the timelines that I expect to see action. And that's what we don't see very often in these, Jason. That's why I think this is so significant.
And just to tag back real quick to the previous number two story, having that management side in place, having someone there who's going to talk to your deputy secretary, who's been there a long time
yep.
and holds the president's ear to say, you're not making any progress on this initiative. Why not? And do you want to go meet with me with the president on this? Oh, you don't? Okay, so you'll be making progress, right? That weighs very well.
I talked to a very high-level retired DOD official yesterday who said the incentive structure can be very motivating depending on how that incentive structure is set up. Jason Miller's most important federal news story of the week is our colleague Jared Serbu's story, headlined, Takei Mandates Entire DOD to Migrate to Enterprise Email. More on that throughout the program today on In-Depth with Francis Rose, and you can find Jared's story at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week is selected by John Palgudas next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
At BAE Systems, we work relentlessly to stay ahead of the bad guys. One significant challenge every organization faces is cyber threats. That's why our experts leverage the world's most advanced cyber operations technologies, enabling us to preempt network breaches in minutes, not days. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. We're there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
WTOP federal reporters use Lenovo ThinkPad Helix, the Ultrabook 2-in-1 device inspired by Intel. A government-grade laptop when you need it, a tablet when you want one. The durable rip-and-flip design switches from Ultrabook to tablet with the push of a button. TAA certified with the Intel Core i7 processor and manufactured in North America. Go further, do more with Lenovo. Lenovo government exclusive savings at WTOP.com/Ultrabook.
Agency of the Month is brought to you by CenturyLink from this month's agency, Department of the Navy.
Nick Erden is Director of Transformation for the Navy. He describes a game to develop business practices.
It's kind of like a card game. We set out a handful of seed cards, cards that just start the incubatorial process of ideating on a concept. And we lay down those idea cards, and they're fairly short. Each card then gets played on by one of the players.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. and their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Uber conferences is free. You basically decide who you want in the phone call, and you set up the time for the phone call. Like, I want to make a conference call at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And you could put all these people in a group, so you could easily just add the group. And then what happens, at the time of the conference call, UberCall calls everybody, and it also sends them an email, and they're in the conference.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Who says summer is slow in Washington? Break through the noise of end of fiscal year buying with GovEvents.com. The premier online resource for government and military events worldwide, GovEvents has over 25,000 members, providing a great platform to reach the government audience this busy season. GovEvents provides a cost-effective way to reach the government and military community with your brand, product, or event advertising. Contact them today at GovEvents.com to learn about available packages. GovEvents.com, where government gathers.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown has the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Jason Miller and by John Palguda. And to wrap up the countdown this week, we go back to the future, kind of. Jason, your third most important story of the week was about the government budget. And John, your most important story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is House Republican Leaders Delay Vote on New Budget Bill Until Next Week. And as we talked about a little bit earlier, the piece of this that's the most frustrating is somebody that's been on the Hill for a long time told me this week, if it were not for the insistence on the Affordable Care Act funding, this deal could get done like that. This could be done in a matter of hours, not days. But that idea, which really doesn't have anything to do with how agencies operate, is what's holding up the works for agency operation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's my most important story on several levels. First of all, it's the congressional gridlock. And we've seen some periods in the past where there's gridlock in terms of different sides of the aisle. Now we're seeing gridlock within one party. But the biggest reason this resonates for me is the impact it's having on government. And it's not just that, okay, we're coming to the end of the fiscal year again and we don't have appropriations. That's become almost standard, unfortunately. But it's that, it looks like we're going to come up to the wire again. So we've got the will we or will we not have appropriations. And I was talking to an assistant secretary for admin earlier this week, and he said, look, even if it's October 30, we think we're going to have at least a continuing resolution next week. I've got to put in place a whole bunch of plans and communication, got to tell everybody what's going to happen if we don't, how mm-hmm. do we order do an orderly shutdown. I don't expect it's going to happen, but I got to prepare. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't happen, I've still spent, and my staff has spent, a huge amount of time preparing for an eventuality that, doesn't go. But now I've got to make up, for lost time. Mm-hmm. The other part of it is, and in the story, it's not just the October 1, new fiscal year. It's also we're coming up with the debt ceiling issue again. I think, approximately October 18, is we've got to bump up the debt ceiling, or we've got to start figuring out where do we not pay our bills. And we've gone through that scenario before. We know it has huge impact not only on the economy, but again, a huge impact on the way government operates. Now, we've gotten kind of used to the fact that, well, we always muddle through.
Yeah.
Government keeps operating. So what's the big deal? Well, to me, the big deal is that this is cumulative.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, okay, it's the same exercise as last year, same results, we'll muddle through. We're seeing delayed investments in infrastructure, in people. We talked earlier about the, we're not filling all the jobs, and not that we don't need them, it's just that we can't afford them. And that impact builds in a negative way. We have, if there's another crisis, we have fewer resources to draw upon to meet that crisis. And it's we all know it's a bad way to run government. Sequester was designed to be a bad way to run government. And here we are, mm-hmm. a full year of sequester, and possibility is going to continue. It's just very frustrating, and I worry about government's ability to operate well enough.
Yeah. I think the part of this that I think is the weirdest, Jason, is John is right. Agencies are planning for this because they got burned by the sequester in January when they were told, don't plan for this. It's not going to happen. It's so awful. It can never happen. And it happened. And so...
But they were planning anyways. My question, John,
well,
is,
sure, but
is when you asked the Assistant Secretary for Management about this, why don't you, did you ask him, don't you have the old plans? Can't you just update the old plans? I mean, you don't have to reinvent
change
the wheel,
dates.
Right?
And
change the dates and figure out, you know, if we had 10,000 employees, now we have 9,800 employees.
Yeah,
just... a little bit of whiteout and a black pen and you move on.
Oh, I'm sure most agencies now have that file, but it has to be updated. It has to be disseminated.
Because the first time we went around on this, the government went around on this, they had to go back to 1995.
Yeah.
There was memos from John Koskin.
Yes, that's right.
What to do in a government shutdown. And OMB has updated all those of those policies and guidance. So I'm sure the agency, this cannot be that much work now. I mean, this is a yearly event. It's like, you know, planning your budget, planning for lack of a budget.
Well, sending the papers out and sending notices out, yeah, that's getting almost routine. But then you have anew all of the employee concerns. It's like, hey, I had X days of furlough and I'm really tight. And now you're saying we might shut down, even though we don't think we will. And so you have to deal with the human element all over again. You know, agencies have just gotten or are receiving their Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey results, the annual employee survey. And I'm very interested to see what it looks like because I don't think it's going to be a pretty
very
picture.
Interested is a nice way
I'll
to
give
put
you my
it, John.
Prediction. Bad. There you go.
The most important federal news story of the week as selected by John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service is House Republican leaders delay vote on new budget bill until next week. It's Paul Kane's story in the Washington Post from Wednesday, and you can read it and all of the stories on this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. We have a minute or so left on the countdown, and I just want to ask you...
My story's for next week?
Well...
prediction.
No, but I do want a prediction. What's the date that you think that we will finally get a whatever the budget vehicle is for all of fiscal 2014 or whatever's left of it?
I will go with February, I don't know the day of the week, so in the February...
That's okay.
In the February 15th to 18th range.
Okay, so...
Mid-February.
Better than this year, though.
Barely.
Okay, John?
I think it may go much later than that. We may see a series of continuing resolutions through most of the year. And I think it's going to be maybe next summer.
Oh, wow.
No.
Oh, that's awful.
Before agencies know, okay, for real, this is what we have.
Wow.
What's your prediction, Francis?
I'm going to go with, I think they'll get it done by January 1st. When they leave for a holiday break, they're going to have it done by then.
I hope you're right.
I hope I am, too. And I thank you both for being on the countdown. It's a great show. I appreciate you coming on, John Palguta. Great to see you, as always.
My pleasure,
and
Francis.
My colleague, Jason Miller, back in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Hour number two of the program is coming next.